Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows the two best words in sports. Brandon Pfaadt. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. How about it?
Oh, I just hope this Game 7 is a little bit better than the one we got last night on this Tuesday edition of the podcast. We will review the womp womp of the century, Astros-Rangers Game 7. Rangers fans don't care. Most fans don't care. They're happy to see the Astros sent home. But that is going to be the second half of our show to kind of put a bow on the Astros season and look ahead, because the Phillies and D-backs are still playing baseball, Jake. You are still in Philadelphia, and you will be back at Citizens Bank Park tonight to see if the Phillies can keep their season alive. Remember, I picked Phillies in 7, and I'm feeling pretty good about that right now.
I actually had a cot sent up to the press box at Citizens Bank just so I could be more comfortable there.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Maybe that's what happened with the D-backs too, because they looked awfully comfortable in Game 6. And we are going to get into that. But yeah, so first half we're going to do NL. I know we've been bouncing back and forth in terms of the order, but I feel like this is the game that is still on our mind as another Game 7 approaches. And so let's review what happened in Game 6. Again, I know it wasn't the most exciting game. I guess it was a little bit more close contest than the one we got afterwards in Texas. But let's take it away. You were there, Citizens Bank Park. You watched the Phillies lose. This was the first non-World Series postseason game that they have lost at home in the last 2 years. And how did it happen? What went wrong here?
It was weird. The 5 o'clock start was actually kind of sweet, kind of warm, kind of hot for a little bit before the sun went down. And I love games like 5 o'clock starts are great at this time of year because you get a little sunset action, right? You see the night creeping in and the darkness blanketing the crowd. Mm-hmm. The other thing blanketing the crowd was tension, Jordan, because the Philadelphia Phillies came out flatter than an opened can of LaCroix. The too long didn't read here is Merrill Kelly, Arizona pitcher, good. Aaron Nola, Philadelphia pitcher, not that good. And the Diamondbacks won 6-1 as a result of it. They put up 3 runs. Sorry, 5-1. They put up 3 runs in the top of the second, including back-to-back blasts from Tommy Pham and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. before Evan Longoria drove in Alec Thomas with an RBI double. And that would be enough. The Phillies actually punched back for 1 run in the bottom of the second, but that was all they could get. They left runners stranded on first and third after a Trey Turner strikeout. And the Phillies offense, in the biggest game of its season, said, nah, I'm good. Yeah. Not particularly interested. There aren't a whole lot of plot points in this game. It was more, I guess, the next kind of interesting moment was Merrill Kelly being pulled earlier than he would have liked after 5 innings. He kind of got into it with Diamondbacks skipper Torey Lovello in the dugout. We've seen this a million times. If a pitcher gets pulled, he's not happy about it. Duh.
Yeah, I would say, so just to kind of zoom in on why he was probably especially bothered, obviously he was pitching quite well. He had allowed just the 1 run in the second. And in the 5th inning, strikes out Schwarber, Turner flies out, strikes out Harper. So in theory, like, I just got through the difficult part. Like, let me keep rolling and at least get another inning against the middle of the Phillies lineup that has obviously been struggling a lot. But he was at 90 pitches, so I'm not super shocked by it. Like, if he was at 78 and they pulled him there, I would be shocked and disappointed. At 90, whatever. The D-backs bullpen was obviously fresh, and so they were able to go to the Thompson, Saul Frank, Ginkle, Seawald, and I guess maybe somewhat surprising that they used Saul Frank. Obviously, they wanted to get him back in a solid spot. I would also rewind at least a little bit to a moment. I was curious your take on using Michael Lorenzen for the first time the whole month as the first pitcher out of the bullpen after Ketel Marte knocks Aaron Nola out with an RBI triple to make it 4-1. I think then bringing in Lorenzen there for Moreno and Walker was... It was weird because it felt like a white flag. I know he gets out of the inning and looked okay. He pitched, I guess, a couple innings, right, and looked pretty good. And when you're doing it, like the whole point of that is you're trusting your guy. I know when we see Michael Lorenzen come out, we know how much he sucked and that he hasn't pitched. We're like, oh, that's a white flag. there is upside to that, because if he can throw some scoreless innings and you're not using your top guys, you feel better about game seven. But that was an interesting move that I think sort of paid off, and maybe that works well tonight. But it seemed strange that he was the first guy out.
There was no other option. There was no other guy who could give them a little bit of length.
Sure.
And it didn't make sense to burn dudes in a game where you looked so helpless. And I think Thompson recognized that. And that was smart. I mean, he got an inning out of Kimbrel last night. The Matt Gelb at The Athletic wrote about this. The four guys that weren't used last night are probably the four guys Thompson trusts most right now. And that's Alvarado, Hoffman, Strom, and Sir Anthony.
Yeah.
Those are the four who were not used last night. And you can also flip that, right, where the Diamondbacks, they're four that they trust. Mm-hmm. That's Saul Frank, Thompson, Ginkle, Sewald, right?
Yeah.
The one moment that I thought was a little bit interesting is escaping my mind. Oh, sorry. So there's I can't remember exactly which inning it was, but Schwarber gets thrown out trying to take an extra base.
This was in the bottom of the seventh. Yes, this was the other. I mean, it seems dramatic to say key moment of the game, but basically bottom of the seventh, Brandon Marsh leads off with a single. Rojas flies out. And this is when Saul Frank comes in to face Schwarber. And he grounds out, and they get Marsh out at second to get the lead runner. They don't turn the double play. So now you have Schwarber on first base with two outs.
And Schwarber tries to get to second base, thrown out. And he's kind of lingering out there after the inning is over, thinking that he's safe. He's not.
It wasn't even close. I mean, on TV, there was like, no, I understand you have to feel like you were safe. And it was just to be clear, it was kind of like a wild pitch that kind of bounced to the left of Moreno. He jumps up, and Schwarber's not the fastest guy. And so that he was out. It was not particularly, I mean, great throw by Moreno, but, you know, not great base running there from Kyle.
And then you have a really bummery transition from that, which is Craig Kimbrel entering the game. The lights go off for his like closer entrance, and the crowd boos. And it's just the obliteration of vibes. From that point, you knew that they were never scoring at all. The game was over. It was a bummer. Sad to see Kimbrel run out to boos. I mean, I don't want to say anybody deserves it. Jordan, you know, you and I are anti-boo. We will never boo. People can boo if they want. He blew two games. And if he had not blown those games, the Phillies would have won the series already. And so, like, that is very understandable frustration.
Totally.
Whatever. Ends up 5-1. Kind of a boring game. Merrill Kelly spotted his fastball all night. He had the breaking stuff. And if you don't leave mistakes over the middle of the plate, you can tame the Phillies.
And if you don't leave mistakes, and what is really clear, and what is, I know, driving a lot of, you know, Phillies fans kind of nuts, is he's basically decided, like, I'm not going to mess with Schwarber and Harper. Like, it's not worth it. I don't need to. And it worked, you know? Like, his three walks were two to Schwarber and one to Harper, and the rest of the team, he was able to keep in check. And if you're listening to this hoping, like, maybe the lineup, finally we'll change in game seven. Nope. It's not going to happen. That's just not how Rob Thompson rolls. Is there an obvious solution? No, I don't think so. I mean, the easiest one that comes to mind is Real Muto, you know, swapping with Bohm. But ultimately, like, just that middle group, and Real Muto's maybe looked the best, but Castellanos just suddenly looks so lost. Stott, who at the very least, even if he's not racking up a bunch of hits, is at least putting together quality at-bats. That has not been happening as much in the five spot. And then Bohm just can't really hit anything hard. And he's, you know, obviously been striking out and just had some bad at-bats out of the four hole. So, look, these are all good hitters. Marsh has looked great, but, like, you're not going to move him up to four. So, ultimately, like, the D-backs have realized, like, that we just do not have to mess with Schwarber and Harper. I think you pointed out, too, that Turner started to look a little bit worse, too. And I think that's made an even bigger difference, especially with how Schwarber's being pitched.
That's it. I really don't have a whole lot else to say about Game six.
It was really like the opposite of game five. And credit to Merrill Kelly for playing the Zach Wheeler role. And for Aaron Nola, I've said a million times, like, if that was his last home start as a Philly, like, that's quite disappointing. And it was interesting that in that second matchup, the D-backs made adjustments against Nola. The Phillies, I guess Merrill Kelly made the adjustments against the Phillies, right? You know, and that's really, I think, what happened. And credit to them for doing that. And I would say, too, you know, the point that you just made, you know, spinning this forward to game seven, when you think about the bullpen that was used, I agree. Yeah, the Phillies did not use, you know, the four guys that they liked the most. The D-backs did. You know, the D-backs didn't. Seawald, 11 pitches. Ginkle, 13 pitches. Saul Frank, 6 pitches, right? Thompson, only 15 pitches to get, you know, 4 outs.
Yeah. And that's because the Phillies are having bad at-bats right now. Yeah. We're getting a lot of early count swings from them. And that leads to uncompetitive matchups with pitchers where they're able to save their pitches. Mm-hmm. There are a number of Phillies who do look just lost. Like Turner looks awful. Castellanos looks terrible right now. Johan Rojas actually looks solid.
He's literally hitting. I mean, I think he has like a 200 OPS in the playoffs, but like he's at least starting to. I mean, he's literally trying to learn how to hit like in the big league postseason. Like that's ridiculous.
Right.
He has a 283 OPS. He's hitting 095, 4/24. And yet I agree with you. He's sort of looking a little better.
He's looking better. Like he's now on trying not to strike out vibes. Like that's all he's trying to do is not strike out. And then sometimes the ball goes in a good place. I am worried about Turner when he gets swing happy like this and starts chasing outside the zone. That's when he gets into issues. The whole Phillies team, if I were them, I would just not swing. Like just take some first pitches because they're getting behind in counts from chasing. They're chasing pitches early in the count. That's putting them in bad counts. And once you're at a bad count, you're not going to get mistakes.
One other thing for the D-backs, and then just we'll get your game seven thoughts here. Corbin Carroll finally scored a run. He had not scored a run in this series. I think he'd not scored a run in like 6 or 7 games, which is, I think, the longest streak of his entire season. Now, he still struck out twice, but I mean, it just feels like there's at some point you'll have to start seeing him hitting the ball harder. But fortunately for them, Ketel Marte is a fucking beast. I mean, he's now, you know, tied the big league record for most games or longest hitting streak to start a postseason career with 15. And he just looks fantastic from both sides of the plate. And that's really what, especially when you talk about late game situations, that's what makes a player like him so valuable, because his splits for his career are he's way better from the right side, you know, against lefties. But he's clearly been swinging it extremely well from the left side well, too. And Moreno, of course, I mean, he only has one hit, but he looked good. Walker is the one. Now, I know he drew 2 walks, some better at bats, but the swings have been atrocious for Walker. Now, again, same kind of thing. We've seen a little bit more adjustments from Lovello from a lineup standpoint. I doubt they're going to change anything in this case for game 7, too. But that was a little bit concerning. But hey, when Fam Gurriel go back to back, you're not as concerned about that. All right, game 7, Jake. Ranger Suarez, Brandon Pfaadt. Now, it's not like Ranger wasn't freaking awesome. And I was, you know, just looking at some, you know, some Wheeler. Oh, he's got the lowest whip in postseason history. Ranger Suarez ranks like 7th. I know it's, you know, fewer innings, but he's been amazing. And obviously the D-backs offense, like they got to feel a little bit better about after that game yesterday. You know, they had 10 hits, 5 runs. It's a strong showing. If Ranger can keep the ball on the ground, if he can get it to those relievers late, I think that they're in a good position. I mean, the notion that Brandon Pfaadt could even come close to repeating, but he doesn't even have to repeat that, right? I mean, he just has to keep them in it and hope that the D-backs offense can kind of continue to roll here. But hey, there's also a world where the command isn't quite as good and he just gets blitzed, but we'll see, man. He was so impressive the other day.
I can't see him pitching better than that.
That makes sense. Like that I feel pretty safe saying. Yeah.
That's the best you can do against the Phillies in the postseason as a rookie, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, it was one of the best postseason. I know he was coming off a good start against the Dodgers, so he's kind of on a roll here, but I think that just like for all we talk about in game, seeing guys for a third time in a game, like, I think about this every postseason, guys making second starts in a series, let alone relievers coming in facing guys at the same time. And that's why when I think about what Logan Webb was able to accomplish in that series against the Dodgers 2 years ago, when he basically dominated in both to like the same degree, and it was just like, how is this possible? Like, this is just absurd. Again, I'm not expecting that kind of showing from Brandon Pfaadt. But if they can, like, that'd be great. I mean, honestly, like Merrill Kelly ended up having a better 2 starts on the whole than Nola. But this is going to be tough. And again, once again, how aggressive are we getting with Arizona's bullpen? Are we going to multiply? Are we bringing in anybody else? Are we keeping it to just those 4 guys? We're going to find out. So again, I picked Phillies in 7. So I feel pretty good about, you know, trusting the Snakes to get it this far. And if the snakes pull this off, man, holy shit. Holy shit.
Just incredible. We'll cross that bridge later.
Yes.
If we come to it.
Yeah.
I have many thoughts. It is incredibly impressive and absolutely irrational and unhinged behavior from the Diamondbacks. The amount of self-confidence here is so impressive. It is all like everything clicking at the right time, except for your two best hitters. Corbin Carroll and Christian Walker have both been bad. It's true. A remarkable achievement already. Mm-hmm. Hats off to the whole coaching staff for getting this team to believe in itself.
Totally.
And the Phillies, Jordan, it is the first Game 7 in franchise history.
I know.
A great reminder that the Phillies have more losses than any other sports franchise in the history of the world.
Biggest Losers.
They're the Biggest Losers. Like, no one has lost more games. No one has been around longer in any, like, no one plays more games than baseball teams in professional sports, right? Yeah. So they've had like 140
years. I guess maybe the Reds have probably played more games, but they haven't lost as much, which is funny. So that is really exciting. Yeah, there were a lot of, there's a good story on MLB.com from Brent McGuire, who I believe is a podcast listener. So thank you, Brent. Just about like, you know, first Game 7 ever. There are four other teams that have never played a Game 7 still. But obviously they have not been around for 100 plus years. The Rockies, the Padres, the Seattle Mariners, ever heard of them? And the White Sox, who technically played a Game 7 in one of the best of nine World Series in 1919, but have not since. So that's pretty close. I mean, the White Sox, as far as I'm concerned, is pretty much the same thing there. White Sox fans, right, at this moment, couldn't dream of anything more, you know, fantastical than a Game 7 opportunity. It seems so far away, a Game 7 for these Chicago White Sox.
Wow. Jordan, do you know the three Phillies to have played in a Game 7?
The three Phillies to have played in Game 7 are obviously Kyle Schwarber is one. The other two are, I know Bryce Harper never has. I'm trying to think. And Trey Turner has. Yes, Trey Turner obviously did in the World Series. So then who is the third?
Garrett Stubbs appeared for the Astros.
Appeared? He appeared in a
game? Yes. Garrett Stubbs appeared in Game 7 of the 2020 ALCS.
Okay, it was 20 Astros against Tampa.
Against the Rays.
Yeah.
Maldonado was pinch hit for late in the eighth inning, and Stubbs came in and catched the ninth. So the three Phillies
who played
in Game 7 are Turner, Schwarber, and Stubbs.
Oh, man. I think you got to start Stubbs over Realmuto here just for the experience, right?
I think that JT would literally explode.
That would be a Rob Thomson pivot for the ages, and I'm not counting on that whatsoever.
Pre-game presser, he's just like, yeah, you know, he's been here before. We trust our guy.
And here's that's true. He's our guy. Last thing on this, I mean, again, you sort of mentioned it kind of talking about the atmosphere, and I said it coming into the series, like, sorry, man. Pressure's on the Phillies tonight. Like, I know Brandon Font's a rookie. He's going to be pitching at Citizens Bank Park, and it is going to be loud, and they are going to make it the home field advantage. But the pressure is undeniably on the Phillies in a massive way here. Undeniably.
The worst case scenario, what if worry wart meter last night, every inning, as it got a little colder and the game drew on a little more, you could just see people thinking, uh-oh.
Holy shit. Oh, like, it was so many different thoughts. Not just like, oh my God. It was, I mean, the individual game you were watching itself and just kind of watching that slip away. And then just everything kind of coming together to realize what it meant about tomorrow. First Game 7 ever and all these different things. And oh my God, if we lose the Diamondbacks, oh my goodness, we're supposed to be in the World Series, blah, 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 blah. So all those things. Anyway, good luck to the Phillies. Good luck to the Diamondbacks. We will talk about that tomorrow, of course. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we are going to talk about the American League champion Texas Rangers, who kicked the Astros' ass on their home turf for the fourth time to send them the first World Series since 2011. We'll be right back to talk about the ALCS.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a quick housekeeping note about our merch. Look, in Australia, we love clothes and almost always wear them. If you're like us and also enjoy dabbling in clothes wearing, then why not consider some official Baseball Barbercast merchandise? Whether it's a jumper you're after, which you would call a sweatshirt, a cap, which we would call an old hair hugger, or a shirt, which we would call a belly wrap, we have it all for you. But that's not all. Do you also like to drink water or caffeinated beverages? Well, that's great because we have mugs and bottles to help you quench your thirst too. To buy any of this merch, go to podswag.com/baseball. The link is in the description of the podcast. And don't leave yourself clothesless this postseason.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. It is now time to talk about what Jake dubbed the lovely championship series. A lovely championship series. More like a lackluster championship series. Not on the whole, but as far as the conclusion goes, as I tweeted, this game achieved epic levels of womp womp. This series did deliver the drama. All of the hype about this Texas showdown, these division rivals, these two teams that really didn't like each other as we knew coming into it, and as was made very clear over the course of the series. Ultimately, the Astros' home field disadvantage won out in the end, and the Rangers' relentless offense was too much for them to overcome. Astros are going home. They will not be back in the World Series. We will not have a repeat World Series champion once again. I believe we are now up to 23 years, however you want to count it, which I saw is the longest streak in North American sports for any league to not have a repeat champion, which I love that. I'm like proud of that as a baseball fan. That I would say that the moment as like a neutral fan, obviously I wouldn't feel this if the Mariners won the World Series in some crazy world, but as a neutral fan and observer of the league, the moment that the team that won last year loses is a great moment in any season for me. Because I know I am about to see something new, something different, new people raising the trophy. And while I am sad for like Jose Abreu, on the whole, I know most people are excited about the Astros being eliminated. But we're going to let's move the Astros to the side. Let's talk about this game. We'll say goodbye to the Astros after we recap this game, even though, of course, it was not the most competitive contest. Christian Javier, Max Scherzer, who would go deeper into this game before the managers, the veteran managers, started pressing the bullpen buttons. And the answer was one out for Christian Javier. He allowed just right off the rip. I guess he got Marcus Semien to ground out. That started the game. So it was like, okay, great.
I love discourse about starting pitchers going deep. And it's like, how long will they let him go? And then when the starting pitcher just throws up a freaking stinker.
Yeah.
And it's like, one out. We have to get him now.
Semien grounds out. And then Corey Seager absolutely mollywomps a baseball. 113 off the bat. Hardest hit ball of his postseason career. And that's saying something because Corey Seager's done a few things in the postseason. And then it just unravels immediately. Evan Carter walks. He steals. Adolis Garcia, first of five RBIs in the evening. He steals. Mitch Garver singles. Heim singles. And now it's 3-0 going to the bottom of the first. But Max Scherzer, what the hell are we going to get from him? And when Jose Altuve doubles to lead off the game on the first pitch, you're like, here we go. This game's going to be 20-21 win by two. We're in for a long one. We're in for a total shootout, which is kind of a fitting way for this series to end. But instead, he settles in. To some degree, Abreu gets an RBI single, but when Brantley grounds into that double play,
has Max Scherzer ever? Yeah. Has he ever settled in to anything? I don't know if he's a settler.
That's a great point. Because even as he's settling in, if you looked at him, he sure does not look settled.
He like settles in to the couch. You know, like, oh, I'm going to settle in and watch some. But he's even just if like he's on the couch, like,
if you think us, you know, our ADHD has us, you know, bobbing our knee up and down. You can only imagine Max Scherzer is like trying to settle down. Top of the second, here comes Hunter Brown. And I don't think I acknowledge Hunter Brown as enough of an X factor coming into this game because we wondered, oh, would they bring in Verlander in relief? But Hunter Brown and J.P. France, who we're going to get to in a second, were really the length options who had looked. Hunter Brown looked really good. He looked good early in the series. He's pitched pretty well against Texas this season, I believe. So he comes in at the top of the second. At this point, it's 3-1 Rangers. And he allows a Seager double, but no runs. Bottom of the second, Scherzer keeps going. He walks McCormick, but he strikes out Peña and Maldonado. Okay, so it's 3-1. Adolis Garcia, top of the third. Holy crap. a opposite field home run that is so impressive, sneaks it inside the pole. What a tribute to Howie Kendrick, except he hit it even farther. I mean, perfect pitch. The reason I mentioned Howie Kendrick, you look at the pitch location. I know this was a fastball, not a cutter. But, I mean, Hunter Brown did exactly what he needed to do.
Yeah.
I mean, he was away, away, away. And Adolis Garcia said, I don't care. I'm the hottest hitter on the face of the earth. You cannot stop me. He goes out to right field. But then, you know, gets the next three hitters. And it's like, okay, well, Hunter Brown can presumably, like, he looks good. Like, Garcia's a freak. It's 4-1. Like, he can presumably give you some more innings. Alex Bregman homers in the bottom of the third. Now it's 4-2. Jordan Alvarez hits the most preposterous triple I have ever seen. I mean, this was just such a laughable piece of hitting. I mean, he fouls off, I think, five pitches and then reaches out on a curveball that is so far outside the zone and just lifts it off the Crawford boxes for a triple. Credit to him for even getting the third on that ball. I mean, he's just, Jordan, I will miss Jordan dearly for the rest of this postseason.
There are highlights. You could just watch them.
That's true. I will probably keep doing that. But then, Jake, here's something we totally whiffed on our preview yesterday. It's Jordan Montgomery. Fucking duh. If Justin Verlander was going to be willing to come in, of course Jordan Montgomery was going to be willing to come in. He comes in.
Duh.
He gets Michael Brantley. And you just kind of know, it's like, oh, well, this is bad news for the Astros. Because Jordan Montgomery, you say Scherzer, you know, settles in. Jordan Montgomery is a settler.
That's a man
this
who cruises
man,
through the middle innings.
This man will settle in any situation. I don't know the last time he came out of the bullpen, but he looked awfully comfortable.
I'm such a sucker, dude. If I was a GM, I'd be like, what, blank check. Jordan Montgomery, blank check.
Hey, I'm glad you mentioned that. I got a text from our good friend and podcast listener, Kennedy Landry, who will now be covering the World Series. She was like, oh, I listened to you say talk about how much you'd pay Montgomery and how Jordan was like, oh, yeah, whoever's agent. He's Boris. I've never thought about Jordan Montgomery as a Boris guy at any point. He's the least Boris energy. And yet he will. Thank goodness Scott Boris will be making some more money this winter. I was starting to get worried.
I was worried about the coffers.
Anyway, top of the fourth, here comes JP France. Now, we're going to fly through the rest of the game after this point, but if we're going to hypercriticize, because it's game seven and every bullpen decision and pitcher decision makes a difference here. So again, it's 4-2. JP France is coming in for Josh Young, who's batting eighth. Okay, Josh Young singles, Taveras strikes out, Marcus Semien walks. So at this point, again, it's only the fourth inning. There's a long way to go. However, JP France, I adore what you have accomplished this season, truly. But he was pretty far down the leverage chart here. And in a two-run game, I have to imagine there has to be some more urgency than letting him continue to stay in this game after he had faced the requisite three batters. Now it's like, okay, well, who are they going to go to, right? What are your options here? They only have so many other relievers. But like, honestly, like I just... something else, or leave Brown in, or something else to let him face Seager, to let him face Carter, to let him face Garcia. He just kind of watched him let it become 8-2, and now it just doesn't feel competitive at all. And it's like, really, like JP France is the one that you're going to kind of go home with? And I guess so. And it sucks because it's weird for JP France to be in that spot. And I know it's the fourth inning, and you feel like you have a lot of outs to cover, and maybe that the Rangers were going to score 11 runs regardless. It just felt weird. It just felt unfortunate.
Very Vichy France, not as much Free France.
Damn, well said. That's exactly the comp people were expecting.
That's what Dusty Baker was saying after the game. It's a weird choice. Like they have, it's, you know what it is? It's similar to the Lorenzen in that on the NL side, where it's like you're hoping the guy gives you
except
your season's on the line. And that's why it's super weird. Like that could have been Verlander.
Yeah, right. Or I don't know. Or I know he got hit around a little bit, but like, how did we end up with Urquidy in the eighth? Like, I don't know. It's just a strange choice. And it's hard. Like these are the sequences of the pitchers here are difficult. And clearly the Rangers had a more clear plan, which was Scherzer for a little bit. And then Montgomery is going to ride. And because he was very capable of doing that, like that's a much safer option. But I don't know. It was just a kind of a disappointing way for that to come, because it becomes 8-2. And at that point, with Montgomery still on the mound, whether he's going to go another inning or three or four, like you, and with the way that a lot of the Astros lineup was starting to look, especially at the bottom, it was just like, damn, all right, well, that's probably it. You know, we don't get runs for the next three half innings. And then, you know, Brian Abreu comes in again, his suspension upheld but postponed till the regular season. So we get to use him. He hits Mitch Garver with a pitch. He gives up a home run to Nathaniel Lowe, who is now suddenly wearing his turtleneck again.
It's back.
For some reason. We love it. Homered without it in game five. Homers with it in game seven. We love that for Nathaniel. And now it's 10-2, and we're kind of a GG. You know, Spores comes in. He looks great. Urquidy comes in. It's just a real slog of a game. Yordan still manages to tack on another RBI later against Aroldis Chapman for good measure. And then in the top of the eighth, Adolis Garcia with the exclamation point of all exclamation points. Mm. Another home run. This one, a beautiful Crawford boxes shot. Just a delicious sky-high 44-degree launch angle, 340 feet. Of course, this would only be a home run in Houston and in Boston. My goodness.
Garcia made contact with the ball, and he said, "Can you take me higher?" And the answer was, not much higher with a 44-degree launch angle.
The roof almost got in the way. Adolis Garcia, let us pause here to talk about Adolis Garcia. I mean, whatever. Wow. The rest of the game, Chaz McCormick gets hit by an 104-mile-an-hour pitch from Aroldis Chapman. That was a tough look. Was that intentional? I believe it is more likely that was intentional than Brian Abreu. There's your hot take. There you go, Astros fans. If that makes you feel good for the offseason, you're welcome. Anyway, but goddamn, that's got to hurt. I mean, Chapman hadn't thrown 104 in like years. And suddenly he throws it to hit Chaz McCormick on the ass. Not fun. Top of the ninth, Stanek, whatever. And then okay. So bottom nine, it's 11-3. And for some reason, Jose Leclerc needs to pitch again. This is his 10th appearance of the postseason. He is barreling towards the all-time record, which is 14. And again, he's pitched in every game but one, right? Or I think every game but one or but two. Anyway, Jose Altuve. One for the road, or I guess one for the home crowd, or at least those Astros first fans pitch. That were still there. First pitch, gone. To at least get one homer closer to Manny Ramirez.
They cut to Leclerc, and he's like laughing.
I'd be laughing too. He walked Bregman, and at this point, it's like, I'm not worried about the game, but like, why are we making this guy throw more pitches? Then he strikes out Yordan. It's like, all right, whatever. Kyle Tucker eventually grounds out. A fittingly depressing person to end this series. Nothing against Kyle Tucker. Seems like a nice gent. No beef with him at all. The guy was just disastrously bad in this series. And you know, earlier, the low homer barely goes over his glove. He probably never wants to try and rob a home run ever again at that fence, but he's going to have to. And he was awful. He was a really bad hitter in this series. And that made a big difference. It really did, unfortunately. He's a great hitter. He's a great player. One of the best players in baseball. But my goodness, he did not show up in this series. And his vibes, I mean, not that he's the most emotive player in general, but he was just not having a good time at any point.
Yeah. It's also not why they gave up 11 runs in a game seven.
Not at all. Of course, it's not his fault.
You can't win if you give up 11 runs.
No, you cannot.
In a game seven. And this goes back to Javier. And there's no way they could have known. I said this a couple times this postseason and looked like an idiot every time. Where I was like, look, I understand Javier's fastball is magic. And, you know, when it's riding up in the zone. Like, they were ready for the heater. The Rangers were on it. And he got one out.
Well, and that's the wild thing, though, is you look at those pitches like, he wasn't missing location. Like, they were just ready for it. Like, the fastball was up. He wasn't in the middle of the zone. But again, like, as I just mentioned earlier, they just saw it. You know, they've seen it a bunch of times this year now. And at some point, the hitters are just that good. And that was ultimately the difference. Should we talk about Adolis quickly? And then we can say goodbye to the Astros and then big picture Rangers before we say goodbye to on the podcast.
Works for me.
Okay. Adolis Garcia.
Wow.
This stat blew my mind. Ready for this? Ready for this for Mr. Adolis? Of course, your ALCS MVP. What a surprise. He is up to 20 RBIs. Jake, 20 RBIs. That's a lot of RBIs.
Yeah.
And, oh, RBIs, guess what? Especially in the playoffs. I held damn right I care about RBIs. Are you kidding me? That probably means you're helping your team win and when every run is really important.
Get him over, get him in.
Only one less than David Freese's record of 21 in 2011. Currently tied with Corey Seager in 2020. However, Freese and Seager did it in 20 games. Garcia has played 12 and he has 20 RBIs. That is so ridiculous. And for him to put on this show in these last couple games, for Martin Maldonado to say the only thing he did was wake up the Houston Astros, and for Adolis Garcia to say, night, night, let me tuck you in, kiss you on the forehead, and walk around the bases and laugh at your fans, was so cool, so badass. It was probably the most he is him performance of the season on many levels, as cliche as it has become in our social media world. It was awesome. And he, again, as I've written many times, like, he is the not just the heart and soul, he is the energy and the emotion on this team. The rest of this lineup is not interesting.
Yeah, they said on the broadcast, it's a lot of interchangeable Caucasians, and like, Garcia is the electricity in the house. And when he does something that looks stupid, like when he rips a line drive off the top of the Crawford boxes in the early part of this game and like walks to first because he thinks it's out, and then, you know, but then he immediately steals second and it's fine. Mm-hmm. You need to let players who are wired like that play their game. That is how you get the best version of Adolis Garcia. And I give Bruce Bochy some credit, of all fucking people who you think would be grouchy old man, is letting that ride, right? And he is getting the most out of a phenomenal, phenomenal player.
Yeah. And now, you know, whatever, seven homers. You ready for my favorite thing about Adolis Garcia's postseason? Zero walks. Zero. He has none. He has not taken a bit. Now, he's gotten hit a couple times, as we know.
I saw that.
That is a free pass, in a sense. But he's up there to swing the bat. And whoever is facing him in the World Series, now, again, what we saw, especially in the back half of this series, it don't matter where you're throwing it, right? And that's when you're in trouble, because it's like, oh, I'm executing my pitches, he's still hitting a home run. But we'll see. I hope it continues, because, my gosh, it is so much fun. But at some point, it could maybe be exploited.
When I used to coach at baseball camp, and kids would be very passive at the plate, I'd be like, mm-hmm. Your parents are not paying for you to walk. They did not drop you off this morning and pack your lunch so that you could take four balls, swing the stick. And so I wish Adolis Garcia had been in my group at camp.
So, but it was huge. And him and for Seager to show up to this degree, I mean, the reality is, Marcus Semien, while he has looked better and has had some hard hit balls, some tough luck outs, Marcus Semien's OPS this postseason is .507 with zero home runs.
Too low.
He's hitting 192, right? But if Seager's is .1127 and Adolis is .1102, who cares, right? We're chilling. And Evan Carter's, you know, getting on base to the degree that he is. Like, Evan Carter's got a .987 OPS in the playoffs. Like, it is more than enough, and that is what makes this lineup so good, of course. And you're seeing Lowe heating up. You're seeing Garver have his moments. You're seeing Young. You're seeing Taveras have these games, right? Again, it was one of the best lineups in baseball the whole season. It's not surprising to see it travel to this degree. Jake, we have to say goodbye to the Astros now.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Right. All right. See ya. All right. Have a good...
Dusty have a good seems done.
What's the Hags equivalent for the have a good Hago? Have a good off season.
That's great. Dusty's done, right? Did you say that?
Yeah. So let's start there. I guess not officially, but it sure seems likely. The reporting that Dusty has told people that this is the last season that he will be managing. I'm not especially shocked by that. I think a lot of people expected him to be done when he won the World Series last year.
Yeah, let's wait until we get official confirmation of this from Dusty to do some sort of Dusty Baker career retrospective. We're not going to try and shove that into this pod.
100%. 100%. But I will say that what it does make me think of is it is going to be an interesting transition here. We've seen so much bizarre turnover in this front office and I guess coaching staff in recent years with this organization that's been to seven straight ALCSs. And now let's also recall that last year they fired their GM within days of the World Series and began their offseason without a general manager. Now they have Dana Brown in place. Presumably he can has some sort of plan or some sort of vision for what this roster will look like. If Dusty is gone, that could make a big difference. Not that I think that Dusty and Dana Brown were on the same page, but like a lot of things could change in this way. There's still obviously an incredible core here. We know what a lot of this team is going to look like, but there's some big decisions for what this team is going to look like in terms of how they're going to, who they choose the next manager. Are they going to just, you know, tell Joe Espada, okay, finally, you can have the job? Or are they going to go outside the organization and Dana Brown pick somebody else? There's a lot of interesting things. Is this the end of Martin Maldonado? You know, like there's a lot of different questions about this roster that are very interesting. But obviously, most people are more than happy to see the Astros be done. And that's understandable. And it doesn't take anything away from what they've accomplished this season. But you had something weird going on at home. And it wasn't cheating this time. It was getting your ass whooped. And to lose four home games in a playoff series to become only the second team ever to do that, joining yourself in 2019, is a tough look. And I still do not understand the home field disadvantage thing. This was not a thing that had been an issue for them in the past at all. And so I don't know what is going on there, whatever excuse you want to make. But ultimately, enough of their guys just didn't show up. The pitching was just not as deep as we expected. And it was a hell of a team, but the Rangers absolutely beat them handily, and they deserve it. And the Astros have some big decisions to make this winter.
Kudos to the Rangers. Big congrats. Pop a bottle, put on the Creed in their honor. We'll talk a little bit more about them on the World Series preview. But it is an incredible accomplishment, and it is a great reminder, even as the Mets and the Padres and the Yankees burn and burn and burn oodles of money for seemingly no reason, spending in free agency, if you do it right, makes you a good baseball team.
It
the Phillies are one
work.
Win away from proving that again.
Yeah.
And the Rangers just did it. Now, you have to supplement it with talent, and the Rangers did that. The Padres did not, right?
Yep.
However, it's just a really good reminder that you got to spend and that spending helps and spending works.
Spending helps. Spending can work. A lot about Seager and Semien. They're not here without Nady Eovaldi. It's a free agent, right? But it's also the aggressive nature with which they've kind of acted since Chris Young became the GM overall, right? It's not just the free agency and the spending. It's the trades. It's the some trades that are going to end up looking bad in the long run.
Right.
But guess what? If they raise the trophy in a couple weeks, who gives a shit, right? This is a team that's never won a World Series. So they have been so aggressive, not just in free agency, in every facet to add talent. And they've developed enough within with guys like Young, with guys like Carter, that it is enough. And so while some of those trades and signings have already and will continue to look reckless in some regards, it does not fucking matter if they win the World Series. And what they've accomplished already is exactly why that aggression deserves to be rewarded, and it is great to see that be rewarded, because we need more examples like these so that more owners look at them and be like, hey, that looks fun. I should try that. I should try doing everything in my power to help this baseball team win.
Speaking of that, I'm going to go head over to the yard and see my main man, John Middleton, everyone's favorite owner. We should do a whole episode on John Middleton this offseason. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by him, the Phillies owner. Game 7 tonight, Phillies, Diamondbacks. Oh, we'll be potting in the morning. Don't you worry.
Yep.
That's it. Goodbye.
Yeah, we'll be back. We'll be back, of course, on Wednesday. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We appreciate those emails and all the ratings and reviews wherever you get your podcast. Thank you all so much. This has been fun podcasting during this postseason, and we will keep it rolling. Another Game 7 tonight for everybody's sake. Although, I guess if you're a Phillies fan, you would just like an easy 10-0 victory. Like, and earlier in the series, we will see what happens in Game 7. But enjoy another Game 7, and we will be back on Wednesday. goodbye. And good luck to Brandon Vaught and Ranger Suarez. You're pitching into Game 7. Bye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.